This is an interview with Dick Eyman. This is tape 10, side 2.
In the introduction, in the description of the territory that where preference power could be sold to the ultimate consumer, included all of the service territory that Pacific Power and Light had at that time in northern counties of California, in southern, almost all the southern counties of Idaho, and I believe even reached into Utah a small distance, and wherever Pacific, which was the one private sector utility that reached beyond the drainage areas of the Columbia River, which was the original intent that it should only apply to the drainage areas of the Columbia River, except for the coastal streams on the Oregon coast and the Washington coast that do not flow into the Columbia. It was based on the water drainage in the Pacific Northwest rather than the service territory of the private sector utilities. So he got that changed. He got it. He said that was totally out of order, and I don't know how he handled it because I never watched him. Had the opportunity to watch him in committee discussions, but that service territory that Pacific has did not be in Northern California, for example, was removed from the bill as not being eligible to get Columbia River or Bonneville low-cost preference power. That was totally Pacific's service. And so then the other area that where he argued continuously and successfully that conservation was and is a power plant, that Bonneville would not have to build new generating facilities, either hydro or utilizing other resources, if less energy was consumed. And so he called conservation a power plant, and that language was probably taken out of the version that I helped draft, got placed into the final legislation, and is in there and continues to be. And so the bill, the original bill, was adopted in 1980. Here we are 14 years later, and the Emerald PUD, by the way, is the first electric utility to have a conservation power plant contract with Bonneville. So it took that long for that feature of the bill to be implemented.
When was it implemented?
It was just this last year.
Just this last year?
Yeah, 13 years later. And we're still in the final stages of how the what's going to be eligible in the conservation definition. Reduce, if we reduce what will happen in, under the contract is rather than Bonneville paying for a new generating facility, they're going to pay Emerald and its and actually Emerald's customers bypass going through Emerald the cost of weatherization, weatherized windows, electrical equipment that utilizes requires the use of less energy, and that's all will be paid for by Bonneville as an investment in a power plant because it removes the need to build a generating facility. So that feature of the bill is in the final stages.
Well, he had also mentioned another interesting episode, and that was about a bill that you were trying to get passed in the House, and you were trying to enlist Debs Potts' support of it, and there was no opposition to the bill. Do you recall that story? Well, anyways, there were some other stories too that were told. One was by, was it Dale Parnell?
Yes, Dale Parnell.
From Lane County Community College.
Lane Community College, right.
And it was about the nursing building.
Building, right.
Maybe you could tell that story for us.
Lane Community College was, became an entity about 1965 using rental facilities that belonged to the Eugene School Board, mm-hmm. where they had their vocational school in North Eugene. And the Lane Community College District provided that vocational or occupational training should be provided. The facility in North Eugene was inadequate to for the kind of a program that Dale Parnell, who was chosen to be its first president by the board, saw. And so the effort was made to get a bond issue approved, which was approved to build a, to acquire land for a large facility that would offer both academic college transfer training as well as occupational training. Visualized was aircraft maintenance, farm machinery maintenance, engineering technician, electronic technicians, all kinds of occupational courses besides the college transfer courses, so that a graduate of Lane could move on to the University of Oregon and mm-hmm. go on to a bachelor's degree and possibly even the have the fundamentals to go on to postgraduate work. One of the local lumber people of the Lane County area, Gagne, G-O-N-Y-E-A, donated land on the south side of Eugene for 40 acres, I believe it was, 40 to 50 acres of land for the construction of the buildings for this campus. And about in January of 1966, I'd been in private work doing opinion polling, and Dale came to me, must have heard about me from someone, because I'd served earlier in the 63 and the 64, 61, 63 legislative sessions years, and must have heard something about me, but he called me up and wanted to know if I'd come in and talk to him about a position in his administration. I came in and he offered me the position of being administrative assistant to the president with emphasis on funding. And I saw in the description going to the legislature and attempting to increase the appropriations for Lane, one of the 10 or 11, 12 community colleges at that time in Oregon. But to get to what he referred to last night, after approval of a bond issue, the campus was started, architects were hired, and the contracts were made for construction of most of the buildings. In the meantime, Dale Parnell asked me to find out what federal bucks were available. And the only thing that I found in the research was that there were federal dollars available being granted for facilities that gave education in nursing, in dental care, and in the health programs. So Parnell says, Dick, this is an $800,000, close to $1 million project for that building alone. You get back to Washington, D.C. and see what you can find out about getting a grant of money. And as I read the guidelines, they'd provide up to 80% of the cost of such a facility, for nurse training particularly. So I made the trip back to Washington, D.C. and was there for about 10 days running a room in a small hotel that no longer is there today near the Senate office buildings, and started rummaging around to see. Finally, I ended up with HEW. And get sent down to the engineering staff that takes these proposals and issues the grant money. I met this gentleman, I don't recall his name, but I showed him left him with our plans that the architect had. And being in Lane County, in a wood products community, the architect had made certain that the building, as much as possible, utilized wood, although much of the structures were actually turned out to be concrete. But in any event, to give the appearance of attention to wood, the architect had designed the building so that every building had a shake roof. Shake production was not a great part of Lane County's timber industry, but nevertheless, that appearance of wood would give the impression that that this new college, which had received approval of a bond issue, was paying attention to wood. So the engineer in HEW looks at the plans and he says, well, got a great proposal here. We sure would like to help you. But this was after the second or third meeting. But we've researched, I've had my people research the rules and the regulations and your nurse and your health building, which was to give training in dental care, dental technicians, nurse training, so that a person came out as a registered nurse, and it even included a child care center so that teachers and others in the training program and students could have a place to bring their children and pick them up at the end of the day, and give training in the operation of a child care center. All qualifying occupations and training. But your problem is that you got this two-story building with a shake roof, and the regulations do not permit a shake roof because of safety reasons on a two-story building. I called Dale and says, well, can we change the plans? Can we use a different type of roof? He had meetings here with his architects. I says, oh, geez, no, we can't. It's be totally inconsistent to put an asphalt roof or a tile roof on that building when everything else on the campus is a shake roof. So that was not an option. So I'm looking at this thing and looking at the plans again, and I discover that there, since it's built on a slight incline in the land, that there's a ground entrance to the lower floor where the child care center was to be located, and child care administration and care training was to occur, part of the nursing program, that dental technician, dental hygienist was to be on the second floor, again because of the slope of the terrain with an entrance that goes right out on the level ground. I says, gee whiz, to myself, this isn't a two-story building. These are two one-story buildings stacked on top of each other. One of them has a shake roof, which is permissible under the federal regs, and the other one has a concrete roof because it's the floor of the building on top of it. So with that wild idea, I went to see the engineer next day and said, "We've just discovered something. This isn't a two-story building with a shake roof. These are two one-story buildings. One of them has a shake roof, true, and the other one has a concrete roof."
Did you say this with a straight face?
Yes. Yes, I did. And he says, "Huh." And he got his papers out and looked again at the rules or the regs, and he says, "Yeah, you can have a one-story building with a shake roof, and you've only got one of those, and the other one doesn't have a shake roof. It's okay, I'll sign it." Just like that. So, coming to Lane Community College was a grant, as I recall, of close to $720,000. It paid for for 30 concrete parking spaces for the teaching staff. And that's what Dale was talking about last night.
Well, that was a good story. I enjoyed hearing it, and I'm glad I heard the whole story from you, because
he forgot to mention the shake roof last night.
There were a number of other people that were there and spoke. Nancy Fadley talked about your professionalization of the legislature staff, and we'll talk more about that because that was one of your major, I presume it was one of your major
achievements. Yeah, I feel it is, and it's still there.
Mm-hmm. And of course, your role in advancing the status of women in the legislature. She had a lot to say about that.
Yeah, she did. I really appreciated that.
Phil Mitchell was there.
Yes.
And he spoke about the Farmers Union of Oregon.
Yes.
And your involvement there, and that was mostly after you left the legislature?
That was after I left the legislature.
Okay. Well, maybe we can talk a little bit more about that then. But you were president of that union for the Northwest,
For the Northwest, Pacific North.
Uh-huh.
First week, it was, we'll get into that, but it was at the time that I became active, it was known as the Oregon-Washington Farmers Union. And then we changed our name to the Pacific Northwest, and recently, within the last 3 years, Idaho became included. It has been included, so now we call ourselves the Northwest Farmers Union.
You know, one thing that somebody mentioned, I'm not sure who it was, they were talking about your family and the you know, the number of kids that you've raised, kids, and all this. One thing they mentioned, and I don't think you've mentioned it, was they said that you had had 19 foster children?
That's right. My wife and I can't say I had them, but between us, we've had 19 foster children.
Is that right? That's an incredible achievement or effort.
Well, I guess after all the hassle that my wife went through when I was serving in the legislature, things quieted down a little bit, and she and the children were grown and leaving home. And she's such a wonderful person to take care of youngsters and identify with them and help them with little problems that they may have, that she heard about the child care needs, the needs of foster children, and so we inquired about it and found out that living out on the farm, that we might provide a home for some of these children that are temporarily have lost their parents or have lost them permanently and looking for a new home in which to be adopted. And I can look it up what year it was that we had our first ones, but we had two little boys first, and after they were found, they had been abandoned by their parents, or the state had decided that they should no longer be with the parents that they had originally. After they were adopted, then it continued, and it ended up a total of 19. Four of which were adopted by our children.
Really?
Yeah. Our youngest daughter has adopted three of them, and our second youngest daughter adopted one boy.
Were most of these transitional homes until they found permanent homes?
Some of them were. Some of them were temporary, going back to their mother after some counseling and rehabilitation of the parent. One example was we had a couple little girls for not too long a period of time, but their father had was charged and later found guilty of having taken a small child up the Mackenzie River and out of a vehicle, and he was suspected of being involved in the case. That's the father of these two little girls. He was suspected of being involved, and when upon police search, they found parts of the little child's body in his cabinets in his home. And so the moment he became a suspect, Children's Services moved in and grabbed the two little girls, which we had, I think, for about a period of 6 or 7 months. And then after he was securely in custody, the children were returned to their mother, and who, of course, had to go through an adjustment period herself. And some of them were totally abandoned.
So some of these children have spent many years with you then?
Yes. Anywhere from, I think the longest period we had would have been about 3 or 4 years, 3 or 4 years. Mm. We had a few that was very short term, but then most of them were longer periods, at least a year.
And this was after most of your kids had left home?
All but Penny, our youngest daughter, was still at home during part of this period.
Boy, that makes a large family even larger, doesn't it?
Yes, but the great thing about it is that people, and I hinted at it last night in talking about our children, is that living on the farm with animals, with harvesting of grain and hay, with utilization, conservation of a wood stove, there was work to do on a daily basis. And that was not only true of our children getting into the habit of working and enjoying it, and seeing it as a means to goals they might have individually, financially, or just pure self-satisfaction. These youngsters that came out from Children's Services they were in an environment where work was expected of them.
Yeah.
And they did. And so as far as a burden is concerned, a large number, a multiplication factor, I don't think either my wife or I ever viewed it that way. It was just something that added. And of course, being out on the farm and seeing animals, and when it snowed, being able to we don't have any good hills, but at least you could go sliding on the ice or mm-hmm. or making a snowman very difficult to do if you're in a, if they were in their original homes or in, if you're in a foster home in town where number one, you're not only in a strange family, but getting acquainted with the neighbor kids and being included in their mm-hmm. society. So that's why.
Have you kept contact with very many?
We have with some of them, particularly, of course, the ones that were adopted by our own children.
Of course. So. Yeah. There were some other people too that I wanted to mention that were there last night. Right behind me was Ed Fadley was sitting there.
Yes.
And he is, of course, on the Supreme Court now.
Yes.
But you worked with him in the legislature too, didn't you?
That's correct. I was served in the legislature. Was elected first in '57 and then returned in '61 and '63 after having taken, at the request of Governor Combs, working as in the Oregon Tax Commission. And I believe it was the 61 session or the 63 session that Ed ran for the House and was elected. And well, in there or in the in the latter part of the 60s or the 70s, opening developed in the Senate, and I seriously debated feeling I had priority, having mm-hmm. been there longer than he had been, to go after that Senate seat. And but I saw an option developing, even though we were in, I think it was in the late 60s, developing that we were the minority party in the House, and that if we could get the majority, I had a real shot at maybe becoming Speaker, and I saw that as the more greater challenging role than mm-hmm. to be a freshman in the Senate. And
interesting.
So Ed went on to the Senate, and I stayed in the House, and
Became Speaker.
And became Speaker.
Wally Carson was there.
Yes, and he was a Republican, serving in the 69, 71, and I think he was there in the 73 session. I'll have to refresh my memory before we complete this as to who was there when, but he was one of the people in the House that was more we had wild-eyed characters in the Democratic Party, and the Republicans had wild-eyed characters in their party. Mm-hmm. We had a Wally Priestley, isn't quite fair to call him wild-eyed, but he had his own independent ideas and wasn't about to go along with the majority. And then there were those that tried to make their own small minority leadership role, and we had a Dick Magruder that did that. The Republicans had Packwood at that time, who was asserted, even though as a freshman, even he was asserting himself as a leader, and had him in. I think if he had stayed in the House rather than going off for the U.S. Senate, I doubt that he would have ever been able to get the majority of the Republicans to vote for him as a leader. I may be wrong on that, but he started off with his annual meeting at the Coast, which he plans to attend again this year.
The Dorchester.
Dorchester Conference. And mm-hmm. and there were one or two other Republicans that we're not middle of the road, or we're ultra conservative, the other extreme, and we had them in our party too. So
probably the most dramatic moment of the night was after we started, Governor Barbara Roberts came in. I guess there was an immediate applause. Everybody stood and applauded.
Yeah, she got a standing ovation.
I think that there was a feeling in the room too of sympathy.